Hello, and welcome to Cult Picks Radio, WCPX 66.6 in your songbook. With me, your host, your bandleader, your wall of sound, Django Nudo.
And me, the rockin' smut peddler.
Hey, smut peddler, starting off in the music category, what do you call somebody who hangs out with a band?
A bass player.
Yes!
It's not funny. It's not funny at all.
It never gets old.
That's not even a joke. That's not funny. Come on.
I don't know why you feel so aggrieved by this, but I had to get that one in there. So, yes.
And then I can counter with, do you know how the drum podium is standing straight?
No.
The drool comes evenly from both sides of the mouth of the drummer.
I'm sure they're more like this. I should have looked
them up. I like that more than the bass player jokes, actually.
We'll have to look them up some more. So this week's hot topic is rock, rock, rock.
Yeah.
And it's a veritable Woodstock of films that we have lined up for our happy members. And we're going to try to go through them all, both English and Swedish. But before that, we have a couple of public service announcements.
Indeed.
The first one is, of course, our friend, the Norwegian secret agent, James Bond, codename 0017.
Yes, we have a special offer in our web shop for a limited edition DVD with tons of extra goodies, not just on the disc, but actual physical poster, lobby cards, screenplay, and a t-shirt.
A very cool t-shirt, which hasn't been sold anywhere else.
And you can pre-book it from us, and the link will be everywhere.
Exactly.
In social media.
Impress your friends. You know, don't just put up an old Bond poster. Everybody has that. Go for James.
And it's a cool film because it was the first film ever to be shot on video in Norway.
And going on a limb here, Norway's not exactly known for producing a wealth of cult films. So this one is a bit unique in that regard, too.
Definitely, yes.
Okay. That was the shameless commercial plug. Now, Just Watch, probably the worst kept secret in Cult Picks history, that we will soon be available on Letterboxd, Just Watched, and Play Pilot. And in fact, we already are available on Just Watch, or rather 25 of our films.
Yes, but we will have everything up there very, very soon.
For some strange reason, it's only seeing the free films. And of course, we love people watching our free films and getting hooked and then signing up to the full enchilada 12-month membership. But ideally, you should be able to find all of our films on Just Watch and Play Pilot and then write about them on Letterboxd and tell all your friends about it that way. So
we will be more accessible for everyone on planet Earth, which is really good.
Hopefully, very, very soon. Watch this space.
Exactly.
So that's it for the opening act. Now on to the main one that you've all been waiting for. Rocking It Out Hard. Why do we go for this theme peak? Theme week, smart peddler.
Great. Yeah, we have films spanning from 1962 to 1988. So you will have all styles of rock and pop and soul, actually, also a little bit of that. Mm. And some really, really classic music and some really, really shitty music. So I love the mix. And we also have a wonderful Spotify playlist with a lot of the music from these films, actually.
Yes, the Spotify playlist has become an integral part, I feel, of the theme week. And it's both songs from the films and inspired by the themes. So, you know, blissful listening for a couple of hours of things to do with Mondo, vampires, or in this case, rock, rock, rock.
Yeah. So shall we kick off with a very unique film from 1962, Wild Guitar?
Yes. Tell me about this B-movie.
Yeah, it marks a first on several fronts because it's the first starring role of Arch Hall Jr. Mm. He isn't your typical good-looking first lover lead role.
Nope.
But he happened to have a dad who was a producer.
It always helps if you're trying to break into showbiz.
Kind of helps. And it's also the directorial debut of Ray Dennis Steckler. And he's a chapter on his own, and we hope that we can bring you some more of his films. He also has an acting part in this film under his wonderful pseudonym Cash Flag. Just love that. But I think that he's more famous for a lot of other films, like The Thrill Killers, Ratfink, Abubu, and of course The Incredibly Strange Creatures Who Stopped Living and Became Mixed Up Zombies.
I'm impressed that you remember that full title.
I read it on my computer screen. And of course, interestingly enough, Arch Hall Jr. went on to play the lead role in The Sadist, which is something completely different.
But also available on Cultpix, as indeed is his other film, The Choppers, from 1961. So if you are one of those rare fans of Arch Hall Jr., despite his looks or modicum of singing talent, then knock yourself out with, you know, your own Arch Hall binge fest on Cultpix.
Exactly. And as this will be, the topic will be music, we will play a lot of music.
Case of guitar flu. Well, she twists on the highway, twisting in the swimming pool. She twists on the highway, twisting in the swimming pool.
That's a bit more Bill Holiday than Elvis, I'd say.
Yeah, but I like that song. It's rocking.
It is.
And now moving on, maybe this is, I shouldn't say that, but maybe this is my favorite of all of these. I think it's like 11 films this week.
Yes.
And it's a bit obscure. I never heard of it before. It's called Discotheque Holiday. And
that's not
something weird video.
As in disco. This is Discotheque.
T-E-K. Yes, exactly. And thanks to Something Weird Video, who dug this up, it's just great. It's taken from the original color negative, so it's in brilliant colors, and it features a lot of really classic acts on both sides of the pond, actually.
Yes.
So it had one US director and one UK director, and the plot is super thin, as they are, but it's about a guy and a girl who are sort of harassing some real-life disc jockeys.
Yeah.
They want them to play their song East is East. But mixed with this, you have a lot of cool acts from America and from the UK.
And in fact, I think it had a different title in the UK when I was looking for posters called Just Something.
Right.
I should have made a note of it. But
yeah. But you have both, I mean, in the US, you have some pretty cool rocking, almost proto-punk, you know, rock bands. And in the UK, obviously, this was in 1966, you had the whole, the whole Mercy beat. And you have the band, the Mercy Beats, and you also have a very, very funny band, Freddie and the Dreamers, who had the most silly choreography of all bands in history. And you will be able to savor that here.
If you ever had a porn band name, then I think Freddie Cannon and the Ramrod singing A Buzz Buzz A Diddle It.
It gives you a lot of thoughts.
Feelings.
For sure.
Definitely.
Yeah, and then there are some real classics. So, for instance, Millie Small, who was got famous for My Boy Lollipop.
Oh, yeah.
She does two songs, and she's just great. She has a wonderful, wonderful style and sort of wink-wink. thing. So just, you know, sit down and enjoy, or stand up and dance to this
and
great movie.
It really is wonderful. Amazing quality in terms of visual and audio presentation. And not all the films have been that well preserved. And, you know, we show the best that we can find. But this one is truly exceptional, so much so that many of the music acts have been chopped up and the songs have been put up on YouTube in individual, because there must be individual fans of Jackie and the Raindrops or, you know, the Chiffons. But here you can get the full experience.
It's a great lineup of stars and music. We think you should come and see it, and so does Millie. Which just leaves Freddie and the Dreamers to remind you that it's just
my Spot Pedler, you know those kind of street musicians who, like, play five instruments at the same time, you know, harmonica, and with a foot they stamp on a drum and guitar and everything.
Mm-hmm.
The musical equivalent of that has got to be Barry Mahon.
Yes, he can play all instruments at the same time. I mean, basically.
He literally did everything there was as a film genre. Exploitation, sexploitation, kiddie films.
Yeah.
Nothing his grubby hands wouldn't touch.
And lots of short films. I remember we went through our own film collection of 35mm prints, and we had a lot of his nudie shorts on 35, actually. And I just had to look up what we have more from his pen on CultPix, and we have I Was a Man with the Finnish transsexual Ansa Kansas. And we also have the horrid Censored, where he claims he is showing censored film clips, but he shot them himself.
Ah, yes. The Cinema Paradiso clip reel.
Yeah. So, obviously, he had to meddle with rock and roll as well.
Of course. It was 1970. You know, music was in the air. And so, to make it all happen, he had a kind of sub Pirates of the Caribbean plot twist in mind. I mean, maybe he was inspired by the visit to Disneyland and seeing the pirate ships, but the plot of this one is definitely bizarre-o. So it's just the spirit of a pirate comes back and decides to take over a local amusement park. And he says, I'm reading here, the time has come to show all the talk of revolution and to act. Mutiny. Yes, me hearties. Mutiny at Pirates World.
Yes, and this theme park was something that Barry Mahon ran himself. He relocated from New York in the late 60s, and he also held a bunch of rock concerts. Featuring, among others, Michael Jackson and the Jackson 5, Grand Funk Railroad. And he managed to get each band for about $10,000, which was obviously some money at that time, but he earned so much from it.
Oh, yeah.
And then he hired Iron Butterfly, who are obviously famous for Inagada da Vida, which was like a sort of pre-heavy metal song, you could say, very early. And in the film, they perform, obviously, but also a lot of local bands, so from Florida. And I tried to find their music online, and it's super hard, because these were kind of really obscure bands, so this is one of the few opportunities you have to listen to them.
Yes, Spotify doesn't have it all.
No, for sure. And so the plot line goes that the pirate says the entrance should be free, and everyone should come and enjoy. And the owner of the park gets upset, but all the kids from all over come on motorbikes and dune buggies and stuff like that, and they party on. So it's crazy, but you get a lot of cool music and silly storyline.
And we once again have the wonderful Lisa Petrucci and Something Weird to thank for this found lost rock movie.
Indeed. Thank you very much.
Described in the line notes as a lunatic time capsule from an era long gone.
Tell me about Musical Mutiny.
Why, honey, Musical Mutiny is the greatest groove in musical history. A flick where everybody does their thing, and I mean everybody. The Iron Butterfly, with such hits as Inagada da Vida, the Sacco New Society Band, Up, Up, and a Way Out, The Fantasy, the group from sunny Miami, and The Grit, all jamming together for a rock festival that is out of sight. Musical Mutiny is turned on, so don't you be left out of the in thing. The kids are coming from miles around, and by any way they can. The word is Musical Mutiny, so take over the streets, the parks, the theaters, but don't miss it. The hottest talent in America, all together in one action-packed motion picture.
Smut Peddler, if I was to tell you that you combine a James Bond film producer with the man who created The Monkees and cast one of the hottest rising Australian singer talents, stunningly gorgeous too, bound to have a hit film that way, aren't you?
It sounds like a surefire box office success, yes.
But sadly, it was not to be. The same year as our previous film, we had Tomorrow, spelled T-O-O-Morrow, a musical film directed by Val Guest and starring none other than Olivia Newton-John. Now, you think that, or most people will remember her as having been involved in one disaster musical with sci-fi vibes, Xanadu?
Yeah, exactly, yes.
No. This is how she almost started her career. So prior to this film, she'd been a singer, established, and she'd done, I think, one little Australian film, which was kind of a let's put on a show here, kids, type of thing. And she got cast in this and flown to the UK. And it's nothing if not a bizarre kind of setup, because what they were trying to do is create another The Monkees kind of band. And so they had four young, you know, musicians slash singers with a modicum of talent. And this really convoluted story about a dying civilization of aliens who pick up these vibrations from Earth that somehow give them life force. So they have to go down on Earth and locate the source of these tonalizers, they called, so that it can save them. And of course, it leads to this band called Tomorrow, who have, you know, a number of tracks dotted throughout the thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much of the thing we want to talk about. I mean, there's some scenes which make you sit up and go, what the? Like the alien who has this kind of an Ed Gaines skin suit of a human.
Okay. that sounds disgusting, yeah.
Yeah, it is. And then he does it again later on the film, but with a kind of foxy, vampy female. And I know this is actually a Japanese porn subgenre. And
what, wearing other people's skin?
Yes, especially men wearing women other skin. I mean, total Silence of the Lambs kind of creepo. It's, yeah, let's not go there. But
it must put lotion in the basket.
That's exactly it. So it came out, and you know, what's a, you know, question? You know, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody buys a ticket to see it, does it even exist? So it's this film, bad. When it came out, it took 2 years to make. Huge, huge conflicts between the screenwriter and the director and, of course, the producers, who really fell out big time over it. Shown in one cinema in London, the London Pavilion. Then it was shelved. It was shown occasionally to the British Armed Forces, you know, on bases in Ramstein in Germany and Falklands, wherever between 71 and 72. And after that, they had to wait for all the three principal director, producer, and talent behind it for them all to be dead before it could be, you know, re-released in a crappy DVD version with mono sound from one speaker. But I don't think Olivia Newton-John was too unhappy about this, because apparently she was so unhappy and traumatized by it that she refused to ever make a film again. And she was going to focus on her singing career. So 8 years later, it took a lot of persuading from her manager to come back to the celluloid world to become the lead in this film adaptation of a stage musical called Grease.
Oh, I heard about that.
I think you might even have seen it.
Yeah, maybe, yes.
But the fun thing in watching Tomorrow is that you see her, because this was 8 years earlier, actually the kind of age she should have been as a high schooler. This is the real young Olivia Newton, not Olivia in the late 20s playing young, opposite, you know, a bunch of other middle-aged actors and John Travolta. So it's a very, very unique film. Wish it could have been in better qualities. In fact, we should start a crowdfunding amongst rabid Olivia Newton fan clubs for a full Blu-ray restoration if the rights holders will ever let go of it again. I think it's sort of barely escaped their clutches.
Right. But I mean, I really need to see this.
Yes.
I must.
Yes.
And obviously, I also am very interested for another reason, and it also connects with a theme we had a few weeks ago, which was Girls in Fur Bikinis, because Val Guest directed both 1 Million Years BC with Raquel Welch and When Dinosaurs Ruled the Earth.
I'd forgotten that. I recognize the name, but of course you're absolutely right. That's the connection.
That's a great you know, filmography in my world.
It is. And some of the scenes have to be seen to be believed. So, you know, watch it quickly before, you know, it gets pulled for sheer weirdness.
Tomorrow is the answer that I will give. If you ask me, where do I live? Do I stay? Yes, tomorrow. There is no more way up high, way up flying, playing tag in the sky. Tomorrow.
I just realized we have to dig more into this theme that is called Canucksploitation.
Yes.
I just stumbled upon it, and I found a long and great article about it.
It's like Ozploitation, only colder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Rock and Roll Nightmare features John Michael Thor, who was a heavy metal singer.
Mm.
Actually, he was a bodybuilder from the start, and
yes,
he always played in some sort of fantasy costumes with a bare chest. This is from Canada, 1987. I think it's really funny that it's, you know, we're talking about it now, because obviously Foo Fighters have made a new horror film where the band goes to this house in the countryside and obviously get possessed or something like that.
Mm.
And I think it's called Studio 666.
Yes.
And it's the same story in this film, so I wonder if they watched this or had this as an inspiration.
There's definitely a lot of overlap and borrowing going on here.
Yeah.
But
and then I read yesterday the amazing thing that they were looking for, you know, to have a cameo by John Carpenter in their film. And one of the guys they knew had been touring with John Carpenter when he was playing his film music. So they got in touch, and Carpenter said, "I will not only do a cameo, I will also write a theme tune for your film." So the Foo Fighters film has a theme by John Carpenter. That's not bad.
Yeah, although I thought he more kind of electronic, kind of.
Yeah. So it's not rock and roll, but it's the music for the for the credits. And I would say that Rock and Roll Nightmare is probably one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Yes.
And I have seen a lot of movies.
Just think about how much this film contributed to the depletion of the ozone layer with the kind of hairspray that must
have there's a lot of hairspray
taken
going
up half
on.
The
yeah.
budget of this film.
Yeah.
But what impressed me...
And then I started reading up on the director, John Fasano.
Yes.
He had a very short life. He died when he was 52. So he was born 61, died 2014. And he made Rock and Roll Nightmare and the next film we're going to talk about, Black Roses, when he was only 26 and 27 years old.
I know, that blew my mind. I mean, that age, most of rock and roll obsessives are still playing in their parents' garage, you know, with their friends.
Yeah.
He was actually making two rock and roll trash classics.
Yeah, and these both films are considered really, really bad films, but they were still his you know, his ticket to Hollywood.
Oh,
so
yeah.
He went on to write screenplays and produce films. So he was one of the screenwriters for Another 48 Hours, for instance.
And they definitely have, you know, his fingerprints all over them when you see them both back to back.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And so we also are happy to celebrate Rock and Roll Nightmare with two cinema screenings in Sweden.
Yay!
So on the 10th of March, we're screening it at Bio Roy in Gothenburg, and on the 13th of March in Bio Aspen in Stockholm. So if you are in any of those areas, don't miss it.
I knew if I pissed you off long enough, you'd make a personal appearance.
Let's tune our weapons.
I did find out from you there's a really good documentary and slightly sad about John Micklethor himself. I'd love for us to have it on Cult Picks one day, but it did sound like definitely a film-worthy story in its own right, if not a happy
one. Yeah, I mean, the trailer is really a tearjerker, where he has been, you know, trying to live a civilian life for a long time, and he's getting a bit pudgy and decides to do a comeback, and there's like a scene where there are six people in the audience.
Oh my god.
That's... Yeah, it's, and he still, like, you know, wears this sort of Viking helmet and shit.
That's
oof.
Yeah. Now, moving on to Black Roses, also in Canada, 1988. A demonic hard rock band comes into a small town and seduces, or should I say lures, the conservative parents who initially opposed them, they should have stuck to their guns, into accepting him. And they get to play for their sons and daughters, who turn into murderous, satanic, homicidal maniacs. Is that an accurate summary?
Yeah, it's what typically happens when a demonic band comes to a small town. Let's listen to a little bit of... of the action and the trailer voiceover, and you'll hear there are similarities with Rock and Roll Nightmare.
Let's make Blood City.
It was the kind of place where nothing much ever happened. The nightmare of every parent in town has just arrived.
The disciples of the devil are invading our town and threatening to steal our children away from us.
Turn up the power! Turn up the lights! We're on a mission and we rock all night!
I read online that apparently Rock and Roll Nightmare only cost about $50,000 to make, but ended up earning in the region of $400,000. And then... John Fasano was offered $400,000 to make Black Roses, although apparently the budget ended up being much higher than that. But it definitely looks like more, and especially they made some makeup artists work very hard on the demonic makeup and special effects in the kind of pre-digital era.
Yeah, I watched that scene and the concert scene where the singer has, it's almost like a Planet of the Apes mask with a protruding mouth, and that opens and closes when he's singing. It looks pretty good. But it also made me think of the Finnish horror rockers Lordi, who had their big breakthrough in 2006 at the Eurovision Song Contest, wearing monster masks. And funnily enough, I stumbled across that band at the Cannes Film Festival, I think it was the year after, because they were... also in a horror movie, actually, and they were wearing makeup, and it was about 30 centigrades outside, and they had this heavy, you know, rubber makeup.
Yeah.
So they were stinking up the place with their sweat.
Oh, Finnish sweat. Did they have a cameo as well in Iron Sky? Am I dreaming?
I don't remember.
Maybe. Actually. Anyway, some interesting cameos in this film as well. We've got Julie Adams. which you all know, of course, from the original Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes, she's the love interest in it, if you will.
Yes. And Carla, I'm going to get the surname wrong, Ferrigno.
Yeah.
Ferrigno. Lou, the Hulk Ferrigno's wife.
Indeed. And then you have the legendary Carmine Appice, who's a very famous drummer who's played with a bunch of bands and artists, you know, like Ozzy Osbourne and Paul Stanley of Kiss and Rod Stewart.
Yes.
It's quite surprising, but quite funny as well.
What I also found fascinating about this film is I was looking for the trailer online, because we always try to put up the trailer together with the film on CultPix so that people can appreciate in the background. For this one, there was not one but two trailers that I found online on. And interestingly, one of them is actually a trailer not aimed at customers, but it's aimed at video retailers, the kind of mom and pop stores, because it goes into detail about the packaging of the VHS. It's got this kind of 3D contour texting. It talks about how it's going to be a 6-month window between the theatrical release and, you know, before it's available on VHS.
Sell points. Rock and roll. They tried to ban it. They tried to burn it, but they just can't stop it. This is the reason why. Action. The heavy metal devil Damien turns the kids of Mill Basin into monsters right before your eyes. Great special effects. They don't fall behind a bush or a couch, and they don't jump up with a mask on and yell ooga booga. You see the full change, like an American werewolf in London. Warning. Turn up the volume, turn down the lights, but don't watch it alone. Good news, 6 months pay-per-view holdback, 6 months cable holdback, 1 year price guarantee, music video on MTV. Great deal. Unique, never-before-seen, three-dimensional vacuum-formed packaging will have your customers renting, re-renting, and renting again.
Despite I think this is why Quentin Tarantino liked working in a video store. It's not just that he got to, you know, have films around him and talk films and shit all day, but he'd get early access to unforgettable classics such as Black Roses.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, then we have the backside of this, the horrible rock and roll thing. And thank God we have, thank God, yeah. There you
have it. Praise the Lord.
Yes, praise the Lord. We have the Christian right-wing movement in the U.S. who gave us a wonderful documentary about the dangers of rock and roll.
Mm. Hell's Bells, The Dangers of Rock and Roll, to give it its full title, by Eric Holmberg. And two things about this that stand out to me. First of all, the host is not a foam-at-your-mouth kind of, you know, bigoted preacher. He just believes that this is the work of Satan, and therefore you should educate yourself about it and make up your own opinion about whether you like music done by Satan. But, you know, he like the drummer said, he drools evenly from both sides of the mouth in terms of his dislike for this type of non-choir music, Bach. I don't know what he listens to in his spare time. Secondly, it has some absolutely cracking bands, because, of course, we all know that Satan had all the best tunes, including The Beatles, The Doors, Led Zeppelin, Madonna, and helpfully, because this was in the days before YouTube Kids, when it wasn't easy, and, you know, commercial radio stations were dominated by, you know, Mötley Crüe,
AOR,
and those. So lesser known artists such as Venom, Merciful Fate, Diamond Galas, you might not have come across them. Thanks to Eric Holmberg, you got to know about them.
Yes, thank you very much. And I would say, out of all of these artists, I would say that the Amanda Galas from Spain is probably the most satanic person, because she has a really interesting, scary voice and can do anything with it. But the others, I don't know. I can't see the connection with the Beatles and Madonna.
That's because you haven't played the records backwards.
That's true. That's
Beatles stomping Cool Al Concession Records has just put together 30 of the top metal hits of the me generation into one double record set. Notes from the Underground. Bang Your Head to the sizzling sounds of Alice Cooper. Go to Hell. Kiss Hotter Than Hell. Cramped Aloha from Hell. Grim Reaper. See You in Hell. CGSS Citizen of Hell. Rigor Mortis. Condemned to Hell. AC/DC Highway to Hell. Twisted Sister. Burn in Hell. Cheap Trick. Gonna Raise Hell. Merciful Fate. Princess of Hell. Raven. Hell.
Shall we move on to Sweden?
Yeah, we shall move on to Sweden.
But not the ABBA or Roxette, or even Dr. Alban.
No, no, we will also go back in time now and work our way through history up till 1982, which is also an interesting thing. Because, well, we have a new film from Sweden this week, and that's Ola and Julia. And that would be like the translation would be Ola and Juliet, because it's sort of based on the Romeo and Juliet sort of iconography. And it's with Ola Håkansson from Ola and the Janglers, who later went on to make to create the band Secret Service and the world hit Oh Susie. And he's playing himself, basically, and the band is playing itself, and they are on tour, and he meets with Julia, a beautiful, young, short-haired blonde who's, she's an actress, and she's out also on tour, but not as much, having as much fun as he has, because she's playing a Beckett play, supposedly a very pessimistic one. But they fall in love, and it's a culture clash, you can say.
It's Capulets and the other family.
Montagues, yeah. Montagues. And Monica Ekman, I just want to state this, that she's a real favorite of mine from that time. She was in both the Christina Lindbergh film Made in Sweden and in the Stellan Skarsgård film Strandhugg I somras, or I, a Summer Lover.
Yes.
In 71 and 72.
She is lovely.
Yes, indeed. And this film was directed by Jan Halldoff, who was quite a name for a long time. And he also made Röt Månad, or Dog Days, with Christina Lindberg, one of her very, very first films.
Yes.
So that's pretty cool. And the screenplay was also written by a very famous Swedish author, Slas, or Stig Claesson.
Yes.
Which is great. And obviously they had to release both an album and a single with the music from the film. So it was really a tie-in, and I think the record was probably released at the same time as the film.
And the concert footage is very well shot.
It
definitely gives you a feel for it. Something satanic, clearly, about the adoration of the screaming women up on the front, but it definitely has that kind of Beatles Hard Day's Night vibe to it, but in color. Do you know my favorite band from that era, Swedish band?
No.
The Spotniks.
Oh, yes.
Because they came on stage in big antenna helmet hats, kind of like Sputniks, only Spotniks. And I couldn't name a single song that they sang, but I do remember them playing.
They were mainly an instrumental band.
Yep.
And they were really cool. And I mean, they were sort of the Swedish The Shadows, I would say.
Yes. Yes, definitely picking up that.
But
vibe.
Their image was sort of preceding Devo, I think, in a way.
Maybe that's the attraction of it. However, before we get on to them, because they feature in the next film, we have a little funny short film.
Yes, and they are both connected. So we have the short film Grejen, or The Thing, from 1966.
Not to be confused with the John Carpenter Thing.
They have no connection whatsoever. And this was featuring the band Lee Kings, and it's part of it is situated at Nalen, which was the rockin' place where band were playing in Stockholm. So it's a time capsule of sorts. And it was directed by Hasse Wallman, who also directed the feature film Dra på, kul grej på väg till Götet, which we translated into A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to Gothenburg, 1967.
Which is a great title, I have to say.
Yeah, I think it works.
And this features a cavalcade, a Woodstock, a Live Aid of Swedish music talent from that era, including the Spotniks, but not just them, our friends Åland the Janglers from earlier.
Jerry Williams and the Violents, and I mean, Jerry Williams went on with a very, very, very long career, and he died a few years ago, but he was singing up until then,
yes,
basically.
He was like, he's the Johnny Hallyday, really, of Sweden, maybe more so than the Elvis.
And we have Shanes, we have The Hounds, we have Lee Kings, and then, oddly enough, thrown in are Sten och Stanley, which were basically, a band playing, you know, very lame songs. So it was not much rock and roll there.
Yeah, there's always the odd one, that, you know, the skiffle band, the ones that really it's like, who are you filling in for?
Yeah, exactly. But it's a silly storyline. It's about a bunch of bands who are supposed to go to this rock competition in Gothenburg from Stockholm. But there's fog on Bromma Airport, so they have to find means of getting there, and they're using, you know, roller skates, fire engines, boats, you name it. Super silly, super thin storyline, and very much inspired, I would say, by the Beatles films from the time.
And also anticipating kind of Göta Kanal, but on dry land.
Yeah, and also it features, along with the bands, a bunch of Sweden's most famous comics of the time as their agents.
Yes, true. And I think,
which doesn't make sense.
No, but I think the commercial thinking behind this is, well, if we just get, you know, seven different bands, if the super fans of each one all pay to go and watch this film, then we'll be rolling in it. Do we know if it was a huge commercial success?
I'm not sure, but they did the same thing. They released an album at the same time as the film, so it was the same kind of thinking. And I would say that the most interesting thing about the film, though, is Hasse Wallman, the director who made both this and the Grey and the short film, is that these were the only films he made, and he was a very, very famous restaurant owner for a very long time.
Yes.
And in the 2000s, he really made it big with his concept restaurants with singing waiters and waitresses.
He definitely had the music.
So they were not only giving you food, they were also jumping up on stage and started singing.
Good job for unemployed actors and musicians who anyway work as waiters. So, but somebody who didn't have to wait for a living, Jerry Williams. Shall we hear a little clip from Just a Little Bit of You?
Just a little bit of you goes a long, long way with me. Just a little bit of you goes a long, long way with me. Hey, hey, hey. Dripping lips of honey, ooh, tastes good.
On the one hand, we have Black Roses and monster metal, rock, demonic, possessed beats. On the other hand, we have, drumroll,
Sven Ingvars.
Sven Ingvars.
Yes.
Nothing satanic about them.
No, I mean, they were rather fall into the category of dance bands, as we say in Sweden, bands playing for, you know, middle-aged couples or the elderly dancing cheek to cheek.
Yes.
But they were also quite interesting because they also came from a part of Sweden, Värmland, where they also made a lot of songs based on the poet Gustav Fröding. So they were kind of serious as well. But funny little band. They were very, very big at that time. And now we are talking the year after the films we talked about before, yes. 1968. And this was Under Ditt Parasol, or Under Your Parasol. And as they were being successful, they did, as many others did, let's make a movie with our money.
Yes.
And the other Swedish band, Hep Stars, did the same thing.
Mm.
But their film was such a complete failure that it was never even finished in post-production hell. It just stopped there.
I think these were often a tax write-off. I know the likes of Pet Shop Boys did that because they were earning too much money for music, so they had to sink it into a film. And if it made money, great. And if not, the tax man would have taken it anyway.
Yeah. Well, here they really believed in this and they put a lot of money into it. And it's also, as all of these films, a silly storyline. And somehow the band ends up as cowboys in Desperado City, situated in a western village in Yugoslavia.
Yes.
East and there's West. A couple of Laurel and Hardy imitators, which is really embarrassing,
yes.
I would say.
Well, we've got a Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin imitator, so yeah. There could be another theme coming right there.
So the interesting thing about this film is that it went belly up completely. The band had to basically sell all of their assets and their villas, and they went bankrupt, the whole business. And they had to basically start their career all over again to earn the money back. And this was a taboo subject for the band members for a very, very long time, until maybe 10 years ago when they found the original negative in one of the band members' garages and they restored it. Mm. And now they can, you know, joke about it.
Yes.
And we got the chance to release it on DVD, and now it's up on Cultpix. So we're really happy about it. It's a friendly little film, you know.
It is, and it's a bit of an evergreen, actually. I mean, it keeps selling on DVD. There seems to be a little loyal following out there.
And the one thing that you don't know is that the band bought about 4 boxes of DVDs and sold them during their tours. Ah,
I did not know that. So.
Yeah.
Under Ditt Parasol. I världen vi oss vänder, lyckan mig inte står. Nej, den kommer och går. Lycklig blir den som dig får. I lunden gröna en vacker flicka ensam synes gå. Hon på en soffa med parasol sin vila tänker på. Det är många blickar som följer flickan, önskar kanske så.
Well, there you go. The Devil does not have all the best tunes. Sven-Ingvars have some of them.
That's true. Yes, they're really catchy tunes. Absolutely. So we're jumping 14 years on into the future from that era. And a lot of things had changed, obviously, from 1968. We're now in 1982. And the first film ever made on video in Sweden, Blödaren, or The Bleeder. And it's so much fun. It's directed by Hans Hattvig, who also gave us Little Green Men from Outer Space. He was also the editor-in-chief of a couple of pop magazines in Sweden, made a fortune on that. Started out actually working with technical stuff on porn magazines from the very beginning. He's a great guy. We are working with him a lot. And we are screening The Bleeder on this Sunday, on the 27th of February, 2:30 at Klara Biografen, the Culture House in Stockholm, where we will have, as guests, the director. We will have Danne Stråhed, who is now singing in the Mellow, as we call it, the Melody Festival in Sweden. He's up for the semi-finals with his song Hullabaloo.
He might go on to the full Eurovision and even win it, who knows.
Could be, yeah, it's a sort of a very white reggae song.
Yeah.
Could work. And and also with 3/4 of the band members of the girl band Rock Cats is what they're called in the film, and here they, but in the reality they were called Revenge.
I should have mentioned that actually when we talked about Black Roses is the fact that it features bands of that era.
Yes.
That the likes indeed. Of and sometimes even members of the bands from the likes of King Cobra, Tempest, Hallows Eve, and Lizzie Borden featured in
you're
this.
So right.
Maybe not their finest work, but definitely you know recognizable.
Definitely, yeah. And the storyline of this film is this girl band gets stuck in the countryside on tour. They end up in an abandoned mansion. And there you have the bleeder, who is a monstrous man who's bleeding from his eyes. I don't know why. Mm. And he's played by a legend in Sweden, Åke Eriksson, one of Sweden's actually best drummers.
Yes.
And who's been in bands like Vasa Express, Stodes, Gud I Brallan, Stockholm Rockers, Eddie Medusa Lever, and Attack. And I think that's what he's most famous for, the song Oa Hela Natten,
Oh, yeah.
Oo All Night, which was a major hit, and I think he still lives off the royalty money on that.
An earworm, but does he bleed equally from both eyes, you know, because that's when you know the drummers.
Oh, that's a good one. Yes, we have to find out. So we're really, I mean, it's a really fun film, and I managed to find a song with the band Revenge for the Spotify list.
Yay.
So that was fun. So come to Klara Biografen on Sunday and meet most of the cast of the film.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been a great audience. How else do we end concerts?
This has been great. I mean, I am, as you all have understood now, a bass player. Don't make fun of me. And so this is really close to my heart.
Yes.
I must say.
And it's been a wonderful tour. I always forget normally, if you're still listening at this point, and could you please rate, review us from wherever it is that you get this podcast? It always helps us in some way. Signing off, spinning down the discs, it's been me, Django Nudo.
And me, the Smut Peddler.